The Heart of Danger by Michael D. Cooper. Part 1. Under the Red Sun. Chapter 5. Adamant. The Starmen were relaxing in their dormitory late that night before retiring. "Dr. Hoshima was amazing, just amazing," said Mark, shaking his head. "Imagine someone postulating how the Xenobot's detection system worked and then actually confirming the existence of their tiny sensors all in one afternoon." "Well, it was an educated guess," contributed Joe. "Don't forget that Dr. Hoshima was the fellow who created the microwave net that located this speeding rock when Zimbardo launched it at Earth. And with the resources of Tharsos behind his search, maybe it's not so surprising that he was successful. Hypertravel bends space pretty radically, like a whirlpool in a bath." "I am relieved somewhat," said Mark, "that Dr. Hoshino was able to determine just how the Xenobots located Tharsos in spite of its shielding. I guess we won't be able to use hypertravel until all their sensors are located and destroyed."
"Dr. Hoshino's team will be able to do that in time. We're fortunate that those tiny sensors were spread too thinly to find us after our leap into the asteroid belt," said Zip. "And just the Xenobots' good luck to have found us after the first leap. They were watching for any hypertravel from Earth." "Once we retreated from the attack," began Mark, pursing his lips as he paused, "don't you think that the asteroid belt is the first place they'll look?"
"Nah," said Joe. "Lyra was smart. She must have brought us to the belt since that's where she sent the holographic decoy when we left the orbit of Earth. She had to have come up with that strategy in a split second while under fire. What a mind she's got."
"But by now the Xenobots know that it was a decoy," protested Mark, "and the belt is where the Amanians hid Tharsos after the first war. This should be the first place they'd look for us."
Joe shook his head with a knowing grin. "Right. And the Xenobuckets know that we know that they know this is the first place they'd expect us to go, and therefore it's the last place they'll look for us." He spread his hands. "We could have gone anywhere. Going to the most obvious place is the least obvious thing to do."
"Whatever the reasoning," Zip said, "we're out of their sight now, and the Amanians have got time to repair Tharsos. There'll be other work to be done while the repairs are underway. The President will be on his way back to Earth by normal spacecraft to avoid detection by any Xenobot sensors attuned to hypertravel. Dr. Hoshima will remain aboard Tharsis for the time being, and we've got our appointment with Richard tomorrow morning to find out what he's got in mind for us." His eyes began to glint. "And whatever it is, we'll be ready for action, won't we?"
"I'm eager to go wherever we're sent," exclaimed Mark. "Now that we've got the newest version of spacesuit from Starlight Enterprise, I can't wait to try 'em out. Lots of new features."
"Well," offered Joe, but he shook his head doubtfully. "What could be wrong with the new suits, Joe?" asked Zip.
"They didn't install the popcorn maker. I'd asked for that first thing."
5 days later, the red-headed Starman was on Mars. It was early morning, and Zip couldn't keep his eyes off the Star Ranger where it pierced the violet sky. Zip caught his breath. He thought it was just about the most beautiful spacecraft he had ever seen. The young Starman had arrived at Mars base after dark the previous night, at the end of a solo journey in one of the Fire Wasps. After more than 4 years of painstaking redesign and meticulous attention to detail, the Starman's spacecraft was ready to return to service. The gorgeous ship had been severely damaged in an encounter on Mars with an unmanned destroyer launched by Andrew Forge. Flying the Star Ranger by remote control, Zip had managed not only to escape the vicious craft that was pursuing his own ship, but also to cause it to slam into the desert. To achieve this, Zip had brought the Star Ranger into a hairpin turn and flown it upside down directly at its pursuer until the unavoidable collision had sheared off the attacker's tail. Damage to the Starman's ship, however, was considerable. Barely able to fly at all, Richard Starlight had it brought to Mars base for a complete overhaul. Best of all, it had been fitted with SE's newly designed antimatter drive. Rebuilt from the inside out, the Star Ranger was now the fastest spacecraft ever constructed by human beings. And the most beautiful, thought Sip, as he rehearsed in his mind the last time he had seen his beloved spacecraft fly, and recalled with what anguish he had caused it to collide with its relentless pursuer. His assignment now was one of the most exciting of his career. "The Star Ranger is ready to return to service, Sip," Richard Starlight had told him when he and his friends had met with the head of Starlight Enterprise the morning after the attack on Tharsos. "I'd like you to go to Mars base and take possession of it." "The Star Ranger ready now?" exclaimed Zip. "We can leave within the hour, sir," Richard chuckled. "I thought you could be. Then you are to fly it back to Tharsos for your assignment. You and Mark and Joe will be going to Saturn to retrieve the key of Tharsos. You will carry three Amanians who will perform the actual retrieval. You will make the journey as soon as you can while Tharsos is undergoing its repairs." The three starmen looked at one another excitedly. "Mark and Joe," continued Richard, "you're not going to Mars with Zip. I have another assignment for you." "You two and Siderovo are going to visit Montezuma Vlai," said Richard. "We have a favor we need to ask him, and you are just the men to ask it." In spite of the Xenobot threat, Zip could hardly have been more elated. The thin air in the northern climes of Mars snapped with cold as Zip and a crew of two were being driven across the landing field in a ground shuttle. The driver pulled up close to the brick-red spacecraft, circling around so that he could unload the luggage close to the base of the ladder. The starman entered the old, familiar but long unused code into his compad, and the main portal opened in the side of the ship. The ladder assembly unfolded and lowered neatly to the ground. "Lifter," said Zip, and a platform descended the ladder by means of the rails on both sides of the apparatus, and then opened up ready to receive its freight. It did not take long to load the luggage and equipment. Moments later, Zip was back in the pilot seat, and the crew members were in their places. The starman was trembling with anticipation as he contacted the tower and received permission to launch. As the Star Ranger lifted up from the ground, Zip saw the sun rising over the distant southeastern horizon, turning the region of sand south of Mars base into a ruddy gold expanse. A few frozen lakes glinted like gold coins. The same day Zip Foster began the journey to Mars, Starman Mark Seaton and Joe Taylor were passengers on an Amanian spacecraft whose destination was Adamant, the long home of the Greegles. Siderovo was at the helm. After an uneventful journey of 4 days' duration, Mark opened up communications with Montezuma Vlai, the reclusive and ultra-resourceful asteroid miner, who had lived for years on the banana-shaped splinter of rock known popularly as Montezuma's Castle. It was in orbit around Adamant, from which it had undoubtedly been broken off eons earlier. "Starman Mark Seaton calling Montezuma Vlai," he began. Before too long there was an answer. "Greetings, Mark. I'm glad to hear from you. Where are you?" "We're not far away, Mr. Vlai. My friends and I request permission to land and pay you a visit. We need your help in contacting the Greegles." "Friends? You mean Zip and Joe?" "Joe is with me. Zip is not. But I've brought another friend of ours. He is Siderovo of Amania." "Sounds fascinating. I guess you can break up my day with a little excitement. Come on in and welcome." The communication was broken. Moments later, the spacecraft approached a roughly spherical asteroid about 20 miles in diameter. Its surface was crusted and mottled, with loose plates a mile or two long. It looked roughly like a partially peeled orange. To the right, a few miles distant from the asteroid, was a sliver of stone turned like a crescent. "Adamant," said Mark. and Montezuma's Castle. Unique formations in the solar system. Land centrally on the crescent Siderva on the inside section. Siderva brought the spaceship to a soft landing and clamped it to the stony surface. Then the three of them debarked from the ship and walked to the airlock that led into the interior of the asteroidal fragment. They stepped slowly, allowing their smart grip boots to fasten to the surface as they walked. In the light gravity, each of them weighed less than a pound. Siderva carried a small package. When they passed through the airlock, Vly's gravity grid took over. They removed their helmets and boots, and they greeted their host with a strong hand clasp. "It's good to see you again, Mark and Joe," said Montezuma Vly. His wavy black hair had grayed slightly since the Starman's first visit, but his warm eyes were as full as ever. "I'm sorry that Zip is not with you. Now introduce me to your friend." He turned toward Siderva. As he was speaking, three Koalangs were flitting over the machinery in the workroom. Obviously, they were not used to visitors. They leaped from shelf to rock polisher to a stack of untreated stones in the corner. "Howard!" shouted Vly at one of the Koalangs. "Stop leaping about as though the place were on fire. Meat's scarce around here, don't forget that. You could wind up in the stew pot any day now." He reached out and grabbed Howard in mid-leap and pulled him tenderly into an embrace. He scratched the little animal's head. Siderva, who had not seen living animals before, was spellbound. The Amanian approached Vly almost timidly and stared at the Koalang. "Siderva of Amania," said Mark. The two men shook hands according to Earth custom, though neither was used to it. "I'm pleased to meet you, Montezuma Vly," said Siderva. "Thank you for receiving me in your refuge. I know the honor you do to me by accepting me here." "Not at all, not at all," breezed Vly. "I can see you're smitten by this little recreant. Would you like to hold him?" Siderva's eyes got big, and he lifted his hands in a warding-off gesture, but then he approached slowly and stretched out a tentative hand until his fingertips touched the top of Howard's head. "If you want some for yourself, we had a litter a while back. I'll be glad to get rid of a couple of them." Siderva looked at the Starman with an expression like a child on Christmas morning. "Can you show me how to care for them?" he asked. Why, certainly," exclaimed Joe. "Take them back to Imlot Tiltami. The place will never be the same." Vly spoke up. "Come inside now and tell me why you have come." He set Howard down on the closest machine. The three visitors followed their hosts through the workroom into his study. There was only one chair, which Vly insisted that Siderva take. He placed the Starman on crates, then stepped over to a mechanical calculating machine that he was in the midst of rebuilding. He pulled its cover down and set upon it himself. He put his hands together, leaned forward slightly, and smiled invitingly. Mark began the narrative. As he revealed the tale, Joe frequently punctuated the recital with his own commentary. For over an hour, the Starman provided Vly with a history of the solar system, the devastation of Amania, its refuges, the account of Tharsis, and the nature of the Greekles, and concluded with a recitation of recent events that led to their visit to the castle. "Well now," reflected Vly, rubbing his chin, "the Greekles are my friends but not my servants, you know. We can flit over to Adamant, but it'll be up to them what they want to do." "Of course, Mr. Vly," said Siderva. "But another will come who may be able to command them." "Eh? And who might that be? Who can command Greekles?" Montezuma Vly looked wary. "You don't mean to tell me this janitor will come to Adamant himself?" "When we are ready, we will contact him, and he will come to Adamant," affirmed Mark. "He will talk to the Greekles himself. I really don't know why he needs us at all for this venture, but, well, we're all in this together, and he doesn't seem inclined to do for us what we can do for ourselves." "Well," Vly laughed, throwing his head back, "for someone who lives in isolation, I sure have a lot of curious visitors." He rubbed his hands together. "Let's have a meal before we cross the gulf out there." He withdrew a small communicator from his pocket and spoke into it. "Lily, we've got company, as you know. We'll be coming down in a few minutes. It's near dinner time, don't you think?" The visitors could hear a feminine voice respond. "Come when you're ready." Montezuma led them down a corridor crowded with small boxes stacked up on one side and festooned with jewels hanging on the other. He kicked one or two wrenches out of the way as he strolled down the passage. The starmen had never been this far inside his facility before. They came to an open door that obviously led to an elevator. Inside was a large crate, which Bligh began to pull out, grunting as he did so. Sidervo set down his own package, picked up the crate, and placed it down outside the elevator. "Humph," grunted Bligh, raising his eyebrows. "You're stronger than you look." Their host took them down a flight or two. Then the door opened onto cluttered living quarters. A table and sofa and a large chair were placed toward the center of the room. A musical instrument with a keyboard was set against the far wall. A large view screen took up most of the wall opposite the sofa. Every other wall in the room was filled with shelves groaning with books. There being more books than there was shelf space for them, several stacks of books 3 feet high, and a couple of open boxes were set among the furniture. "Lily, we're here," Montezuma called out. A short, pleasant-looking woman entered the room from one of several doors. Dark wavy hair parted just off-center fell down both sides of her head to just below shoulder length. She had a stately yet informal demeanor and greeted each of her visitors by name in turn. "Please follow me to the dining area," she said after introductions had been made. "I have brought you a gift from Amania," said Sidervo as they entered the dining room. He handed the package to Lily. The woman looked quite surprised and very pleased. She opened the package and took out a piece of fruit. "It's Mula Fendori," said Sidervo. "People from Earth seem to like these very much." "We sure do," affirmed Joe. "We called them Martian plums the first time we ate them, but they're a lot tastier than plums." I'll serve them with dinner," stammered Lily. "No, no," all three visitors protested. "We have some aboard our ship, but these are for you." "Thank you," said Fly. "If they've got seeds, we'll be able to grow them here." "If you are successful, they will be the first Mula Fendori grown outside of Amania," said Sidervo. "I expect we'll be able to do it," said Fly confidently. "I expect you will," agreed Joe with a laugh. Lily served them a meal of flat bread, yellow cheese, and fresh greens and vegetables seasoned with herbs and flavorful condiments. Dark tea was available in an earthenware pot in the center of the table. When all had eaten their fill and given due compliments to their hostess, Montezuma pushed back his chair and said, "Guess we may as well get on over to Adamant." The visitors thanked Lily and said their goodbyes as Bligh escorted them back toward the workroom. Bligh spoke up as they were walking. "How long will it take this janitor to get there once we let him know we're ready for him?" "He will be able to appear instantly, Mr. Bligh," answered Sidervo. "I do not know how he transports himself, but nothing seems to be able to prevent or delay him. Currently he is aboard Ocean." "Ocean, Tharsos, you all had better decide what you're going to call this unbelievable asteroid spacecraft." "We use the names interchangeably," said Mark. "Its proper name is Ocean, but before we knew it, Zip named it Tharsos. The word means courage in Greek, and once Zip learned the history of Amania, he wanted a name for its third moon that would counterbalance Deimos and Phobos, panic and fear." "I see a good choice," said Montezuma approvingly. "Here we are at the airlock. Suits and helmets on, folks. Let's all go in your ship, shall we?" Less than half an hour later, the four men stepped out of the Amanian spacecraft onto the rocky terrain of Adamant. Sidervo had landed the graceful ship on a relatively smooth but uneven plain of solid stone, about 100 yards across and pocked by countless small impact craters. Before they left the ship, the Amanian had sent a message to Ocean that he was about to land on Adamant and that the janitor was to be informed. It has been several lifetimes of my people since a Mannian set foot on this asteroid to learn from the Ozenta, friend Montezuma, said Siderbo. But you are their only spokesman now. I don't think so, friend Siderbo, said Montezuma, his voice crackling with excitement. I think that's the janitor, or dice me up and feed me to the Koalangs. With a shaking hand, he was pointing to a place 20 or so yards ahead, but the others had already seen. The janitor's gold and orange environmental suit had appeared on the bleak gray and black landscape. His voice imprinted itself in their minds. Bring the Griegels here, Montezuma Vly, if you would please. Vly stepped forward a few paces. Griegels, he called out. Come on out. You've got visitors. Almost at once, a dozen crab-like entities, no more than a foot across, scuttled out from under a few small overhangs and came toward the group. As they circled around, others joined them, some emerging from holes and others from farther away, scurrying across the uneven terrain. More and more came, some flying, some rolling, and some even walking, none of them taller than a foot. They came in the shape of crabs, of balls, of birds, and even of humans. When the assembly had come to an end, at least 100 of them surrounded the place where the four people stood. In spite of the variety in their appearance, they were all made of mirror-smooth metal shining like silver, with here and there a few pieces of quartz or some similar crystal. Here are the Griegels, said Montezuma Vly, looking new but older than the solar system itself. Indeed, said the janitor, who'd stepped up to the outer edge of the circle of Griegels, and older than all life in the galaxy but my own, and the Xenobots.